Welcome to our podcast, Cow Dust and Cattle Country. I'm your host, Laura, and we have a special guest today. And Carolyn, you get to introduce her.
All right. This is Carolyn with Ranchers Have Rights, and I'm introducing Welda. I'm not sure how to introduce her, except I wanted to tell about why I gave her a phone call, and then maybe she can kind of introduce herself a little bit about what she's done in the past. But before we get there, Laura, why don't you tell us, you were just telling us a story about going out with your dogs. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, well, yesterday, for the first time or the second time, we went out on the newly graded road that we haven't had a road for about a year since the big after flooding from the fires. And so we hauled out two big loads of last year's calves. And so we're going to have some income coming in. So yay for that. Plus, we got in real late. And today I had to take the dogs out and do some work with them. And I had Mama Dog. And then I had two of last year's pups. And then I had my little 7-month-old puppy. And since he has gotten to bond with the livestock around the house, because last year when the year-old pups were small enough, they didn't get to bond with anything because after we had the fire, all the fences were gone. The cattle just scattered. There was no place to keep them. There was no hauling in hay. There was no hauling calves out. Anyway, it seems like the little 7-month-old puppy's more bonded to the cattle, and he's kind of teaching the year-old puppies how to act around the cattle. So I had a good day today. Cows hate the dogs, though, because they've been wolfed for 5 or 6 years now, and just steadily. So the cows don't like the dogs, and they'll run right into the middle of them. So I have to kind of, you know, tell the dogs, no, you can't defend yourself. So sorry.
You put a good post on Facebook, and these aren't your typical dogs. These are, we've talked about them before, but these are huge dogs.
Yeah, and the ones I used today were the shorter ones, but they're Turkish Kangals, or Kangal, as they say in Turkey. They're pretty intense, but I just love them. They're just as sweet as they can be until they get into a fight. Two of the bigger males get into a fight with each other, and then it's no fun at all, let me tell you.
Impressive.
But yeah, they're impressive. And I have had them run two packs of wolves out of here in different times without them really knowing what they were supposed to do. But I got two adults 2 years ago, and they didn't really know what they were supposed to do. But I just started taking them with me horseback or on the four-wheeler, mostly the four-wheeler because I'm an old fat grandma. And now I have 7, and I just take them with me as I go during the day. And if I have wolves in the cattle, I'll take my bedroll out and throw them down, and I'll chain them up somewhere, and we'll just, you know, kind of get between the cows and the wolves. And boy, the wolves don't like them at all. And the dogs are kind of just figuring it out. As far as just shepherding them in the cattle by themselves, that's not what's happening, because in part because of the fire. But we're figuring it out as we go. It's just a lot of work to do that kind of thing. But it's better than finding dead cattle everywhere and dead baby calves or missing calves and just having wolf tracks up and down the road.
Yeah, I'd rather hear about dog fights than see pictures of you holding dead calves. So this is way better.
Yeah, it is way better. And they're just delightful animals. They're just very sweet and kind-hearted. And, you know, they're jealous of each other. They can go all day long by themselves running around and having a good time. But until I get a hold of one of them and the other one wants me to hold them, oh, hold me. I only weigh 130 pounds. But then the other one's like, I peed on this bush for you, Ma.
They aren't poodles, are they?
No, and then the one that didn't pee on the bush wants to pee on the bush, and then it's grr, grr, and then it's on, and wow, it is not good. They have a huge PSI. They hurt each other when they do get into their little fights, and then I have to put them on antibiotics, and yada, yada, yada. But it's better, anything is better than having chronic 2 or 3 packs of wolves in your calving pasture.
Yeah, good for you for getting that done.
Well, it's a work in progress.
There we go.
I've known Welda for 25 years, and she and I used to do a lot of writing and working on issues, and we haven't done a lot of that lately, but anyway, Weldon needs to tell us about herself and what she's going to talk about today.
Well, I'm a generational rancher. I mean, my mother came from ranching people who came from ranching people. My dad came from ranching people. It's in my blood. My dad's a fighter, was a fighter. The reasons that he fought the BLM, the Forest Service, state land, the Army, I mean, all of that. And didn't, I don't think ever won really any of those court cases or anything, but he fought the government overreach always. And so I grew up with that, and I didn't get interested in it until, you know, 1990, 91 or something. I leased a ranch outside of TRC, got involved in cowbells finally kind of at that point. And that was back when livestock free by 93 was coming up, you know, and so, but anyway, it's been going on, government overreach, government taking, you know, the conservation stuff, all of that has been going on for a long time. And there's some of us, like Laura pointed out, that have been fighting it for a long time. And, you know, followers of Angus and Dick Manning and, of course, Howard, the wonderful Howard. I've kind of lost my touch. It's good that you have tapped me, because it made me dig out some of my notes and stuff. I was never as good as my dad, but, you know, I could quote, you know, the Mining Act and the Organic Act and all the years and blah, blah, blah. I could quote all that. And I haven't messed with this stuff for years because it's discouraging. And because, you know, at some point you need to stay at home and take care of what it is you need to take care of and pay the bills and get stuff done. And as I talked with Carolyn, you know, the reason that we ranchers have trouble defending ourselves is because we have to make a living, and because we have water gaps out, and because we have whatever it is, and we have to do those things, and we don't have unlimited funds. It's just hard. It's really hard. And so, you know, we need to band together and continue to band together and get some knowledge out there. And it's amazing to me, really amazing to me, how few ranchers even know their rights. And I'm glad that you're doing that, Carolyn. And of course, we have struggled for many years to figure out what our rights were and how to defend ourselves and how to do all the things that we're, you know, still trying to do, still very much trying to do. And we're going to do more of it. I mean, they're not going to let up. We're going to have to do more education and more fighting. That's just the nature of the beast.
I saw something online the other day, and it was, I think, from the Heber Wild Horse Group. And it was a flat-out attack on every other rancher in the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest in Arizona. And these people literally want these ranchers put out of business so that the range can hold those feral horses that have been dumped out there since horse slaughter became illegal in the United States. So that just really shocked and floored me. I thought, what in the world? Why do they think they have a legal right to run people out of business for a bunch of animals that, you know, they're not wild horse Annie's wild horses. They're just animals that have been dumped in the last 15 or 20 years. I was a little shocked by that, but that's one of the things that I saw this week that just kind of made me wake up.
Well, part
and take
of it
notice.
Was whenever they started using the term public land.
Yeah.
But the bureaucracy got so large that it couldn't be supported by the lease money, and they couldn't support their own bureaucracy. So they had to start taking tax money and using tax money. And so to do that, they started calling it public land so that they could justify the reason that the guy next door here in town is going to be paying taxes for the BLM bureaucracy. And so they gave a portion of ownership, in my opinion, to the public by virtue of calling it public land. Smooth move on their part.
Right. Legally, it's no longer public lands. They just kind of, you know, let it be out there nebulously. There's no legal definition that supports this.
No, but they're rewriting definitions. A couple of years ago, I live in Carrizozo, and so the wild horses of Alto are just up the hill, and wild horses go through Ruidoso and whatever. And I sat in on several of those court hearings, and they were talking about public land, and they even included deeded land in public land. And so when it was over, of course, you know, the cowboys in the hallway and stuff, and I was telling Randall Major and whoever, and called Karen Cowan, and, you know, and said, we got to start watching this definition of public land. Well, everybody has in their mind that they know what it is they know. And then it was about a year later when people were going, hey, wait a minute, they're redefining public land.
They literally they
just
are.
Said that the deeded land is public land. And I was like, you know, so sometimes people pick up on little tiny phrases and then the rest of us don't listen because we know what those phrases mean. But everybody's got to keep their ear out and we've got to all pay attention to those really small deals because they can be a precedent. And it's in a courthouse and those things cause precedents. And they refer back to it, as we all know. So one of the things that we need to watch is all of those definitions of public land.
Right.
That was our show last week. What I didn't say last week was how big an issue Angus would make about these are not public lands.
Exactly.
That was one of Angus's main point, and I want to give him credit for that for sure.
The Multiple Use Sustained Yield Act does allow for the public to have some rights and some, you know,
entrances on this land,
but it doesn't allow for them to revoke the prior existing rights that were the intent of Congress.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And not only just Congress, I have a book that talks about, you know, the famous speeches of different presidents. Well, Theodore Roosevelt, I have one of his speeches about that. And he wanted timber. He wanted grazing. He wanted all of those things kept in a pristine manner so that the public could enjoy it.
Right.
He was very big about use on it. He said it was for the working man, Theodore Roosevelt. I have an article, it's from 1941, and this will draw into Welda's family, I believe. And it's from the Albuquerque Journal, and it's called The Air Corps to Buy 1,267 Acres Bombing Range in New Mexico. And what caught my attention on it was the words, right, they're going to spend $500,000 to buy federal land grazing rights.
My dog. This is where the editing will come into place.
Yeah. The mailman showed up.
That's funny. So on this article, it says that the value on the rights to be acquired was set as follows. Federal land grazing rights, $500,000. And they called it rights, but today they say we have no rights. But the federal government paid $500,000 for grazing rights. And then the cost of the state land was a little bit more, $710,000. And then this is kind of interesting. Private land grazing rights was $130,000. But think about that. Private land grazing rights is different than federal land grazing rights.
Mm-hmm.
Private land grazing rights was probably the deeded and the grazing around that, whereas federal land grazing rights, maybe that's when it was the Taylor Grazing Act and it wasn't tied to a homestead is what I was kind of thinking. But either way, we hear the word rights. We have federal land grazing rights. We have private land grazing rights. Rights was a thing. All that money was spent on it. And then that's That's Welda's story. So, Welda, we've kind of talked about when I called you to ask you if you would do this podcast and I asked your story. It was kind of interesting. You said that for World War II, the army came to your dad or your grandfather?
No, not my parents, the predecessors in ownership to the ranch that we have now. We lost land to the army in the late 80s and 90s. And I'll explain that in a minute. But we weren't some of those who lost the land, lost their entire ranches and everything in the beginning. And that was about in 1950. I've been looking through some paperwork that I have. Unfortunately, I threw away some of that. But in 1950 and 51, the predecessors were the Renfros. Doyle Renfro homesteaded it, and his dad homesteaded this rock ranch out here. And they had it. They lost some of the land, some Withers. I knew the Withers and around in Carrizozo and Tiercey, and some of my family, the Kane family, lost land whenever they took it for the White Sands Missile Range. But see, they didn't take it then. They entered into an agreement of 4 years or until the war ended. And then it was later, then they extended that one time. And then I think into 1950 and 51. And again, I don't have all the paperwork that I had way back when. And then they extended it for an amount of time. This one, this contract with Renfro and the Corps of Engineers, U.S. Army, is only for 1 year, but it does say that it'll go year to year. And
how much did they pay?
Paid $1,900 to the Renfros for the equivalent of for just this lease that I'm going to talk about for 14 sections. They paid some of the ranchers, and they did not pay more of the ranchers for the entire White Sands. I mean, you know, the McGregor Range, we all know the story of how Mr. McGregor held them off with a shotgun, and they never did pay him. Maybe he refused it. I don't remember exactly that story. But and I don't know why. I don't know how they pick, as the government will sometime, who they pay and who they don't pay. But in 1973, there was a lawsuit going on in the United States District Court for the District of New Mexico. That was the United States of America plaintiff versus 228,099.65 acres of land, Truman Spencer and et al. And it names a bunch of people, at least a full page of people who had not ever gotten paid for losing their land.
Is that the court case I posted, or is this a different one?
I couldn't find where you posted. I'm sorry. I couldn't ever locate it.
So what did you say the case was? This one is U.S. versus 40,000. Is that what you just said?
No, this is a U.S. versus 228,099.65 acres.
Oh, so there was several cases.
And this is civil action number 8561, filed in May of 1973.
And what was their problem? What was the case about?
Still trying to get reimbursement for the lands taken, taken by the government, because the government had never paid any kind of reimbursement to most of the ranchers.
So let me get this straight. When we're told that we have options when they revoke grazing allotment because we have a Fifth Amendment right for reimbursement under the Takings Act, there is no reimbursement.
No, that's cited in some of this paperwork. My father cited that, and it didn't stand. So there's no reason it shouldn't stand, because it's constitutional, but it didn't stand.
Well, didn't you, are you going to tell the story about where your family supposedly got paid and then?
They did. My dad took, and I can't find that part of the court case. but it was called the Ordis, O-R-D-C-I-T project, Ordis. And they had Red Canyon campgrounds. And this is the 14 sections that my dad lost, starting in the 70s, ending up in the early 90s.
What would 14 sections raise? Because that sounds like such a big thing, but because there's supposed to be enough to sustain a family. So that was about 400 cattle, do you think?
This ranch only runs about 6, maybe 8 cattle to the section. Okay. It's a desert ranch. When I was a kid, my dad had 500 head on this ranch. It was a 30-section ranch at that time. But weather has, it's just, you know, the changes in the weather patterns that happen naturally, happen as an act of God, not by emissions or anything. And so, anyway, there is a map of what was the original whole ranch. And then to my left is starting up there with section 4, 5, 9, 8, and down through there is the part that they took. And the east boundary of the White Sands Missile Range used to come up to almost this fence. It didn't. Interestingly enough, they kept about a half section buffer there. This was a buffer range, but they had another buffer. So a woman named Mary McDonald took up this case trying to get people paid, and my dad supported her. But in the meantime, the Army leased from the Renfros, then they leased from the next people, which was Clayton Payne. And then somewhere in there, they quit paying the Army. They had an agreement, and the Army said, we have as much right as you do. And so they quit paying. There was no paying to anybody. And then later in 71, 73, somewhere in there, then my dad, who bought it in 69, had to start paying the Army for this lease. And I can't find how much he paid for it. My memory tells me it was $6,000, but that would have been really high in those days. So I don't know if that's true or not. And then he started paying. And then after he helped Mary McDonald, suddenly he started having trouble with the general. And the general's name, I don't know if you want to edit this out, but it was General Jones. And he's the one who said this buffer zone has changed from the old Army fence down to the new BLM Army fence. Now, see, the BLM told my dad that they were built, and they used range improvement funds, that they were building that fence down through there for the rotation, and because that pasture was too big, you know, to use it for better grazing and stuff. But later that was the fence where the BLM gave that land to the Army, but it was land, it was the lease land that my dad had bought because it was a 30 section ranch at that time. And so General Jones changed it to the BLM fence. And then so Daddy started a court battle there in Socorro County of arguing, you know, the war was gone, the camp was abandoned, no one was using it, his grazing rights, only grazing, and that they were taking his land without compensation. And so then there was a period of time that the cattle were there, but we were not really allowed to go to the well. We weren't really allowed to.
That's just like being run from an office. I said, yeah, you can have your cattle there, but you can't go out and check the pipe.
You can't. Yeah. We were literally checking water at night, you know.
Rules and regulations by people who don't understand how the land runs.
Well, we didn't want to get into any more arguments with the range riders over there because they weren't really our enemies. The range riders weren't, but they had a job to do, which was to make sure that we weren't on the land. Cows were, but we weren't. And then at some point in the early 90s, Kinleys had to move their cattle and get totally off of it. So, and then that was that.
Yeah, that was a how many year process? It started in 74 or 5?
Looks like 72 or 3 here.
I'm still looking for the court case. Where did you post it, Carolyn?
I posted it on Ranchers Have Rights, but if you on Facebook page, but if you go to ranchershaverights.com, go to grazing permit.
I didn't do that. Okay, I'll do that.
Yeah, scroll down and you'll see the court case. It has a gestia and then it has yellow highlighted, and tap on that picture and it'll take you to the whole case. I have it right now in front of me while you guys are looking. Let me just read what it says about property.
Yes,
and this is the whole thing. Is why I called Welda, is because the government on this conservation use that they're proposing on BLM lands is going to say, oh, we're just going to take just a little bit. We won't hurt the ranchers. And that's why I called Welda, because she's lived with it, like we just said, for 20 years.
And how do government. You know when they're lying?
We all know the answer to that when they're talking.
So, I don't know. I've seen some pretty good lies come through in letter form.
In this court case, it was 42,000 acres versus the U.S., and I think it was 75. It says, it is altogether another matter when the government does not take his entire interest, but only by the form of its proceedings chops it into bits, of which it takes only what it wants. However, it leaves him holding the remainder, which may then be altogether useless to him, refusing to pay more than the market retail value for the use of those chips so cut off. This is neither the taking nor the just compensation the Fifth Amendment contemplates. So we have rights, but I don't believe ranchers know how to defend those rights. And right now we're giving knowledge out there that, yes, we have rights. Please look it up. But the next plan is, how do we defend ourselves? How do we do that? That's the $20 million question.
Well, if we had $20 million, it really wouldn't be much of a question now, would it?
Right.
We'd be able to hire someone to defend us.
Our opponents do have $20 million that
exactly.
are given to the nation. And good grief.
Well, and we can't do it like the old guys did. This Mr. Renfro, Doyle Renfro, back in history when the government was killing cattle because there was such a bad drought and cattle were skinny and didn't have anything to eat. And the government was coming out and killing cattle. They came up to the Renfro and he apparently opened the door with a shotgun and said, you're not killing any of my cattle. You're just not. And he was armed and they weren't. I'm not going to get into that, the philosophy behind that. But and they left. And the reason that McGregor got to live out his life, not on his whole ranch, but at least on his little house, was because he had a shotgun. Diverting here, but being armed keeps the government from running over you. I don't know if it would work in these days.
Right. They'd make you out to be crazy these days if you did. But we don't want to go to guns.
Not going there. No.
Do not want to do that. But
that's always a bad idea. It never ends well.
No, right. We have to defend ourselves one by one, I think, in our ranger stations. And we have to know the laws. At some point, it gets too big and it goes to a lawyer. And I have not seen very many lawyers win for the ranchers.
Well, it's unfortunate that you have to educate your attorney because they don't know the mm-hmm. law and they don't mm-hmm. know where to look for the law. Mm-hmm. And they don't know where to look for the intent of Congress behind that law.
But there are, like we keep saying on all of our shows, the laws and the court cases have been won in the ranchers' favors.
They have. And one of the ones that we don't hear about now is the United States versus New Mexico.
When you talk about it in your Forest Service office, they tell you they just don't agree with that ruling and move right on you, over the top of you. It's
they
a
do.
U.S. Supreme Court
yeah.
ruling. They can tell you that they just don't agree with it. But they do.
Well, they do on all of those. So that's one case. We have the water rights from July of 1866. We have the right-of-ways, which are the ditches, pipelines, flumes, and 50 feet on each side, July 1866. private land in 160-acre increments, which is the Homestead Act and the Taylor grazing. We got mineral rights and oil and lease gas rights in 1872, and grazing rights, which is tied back to July of 1866 and was upheld in the Buford versus Houts. But they have run over that. They ran over that with the Hage case and said that wasn't relevant. I think that's the one. And that wasn't relevant. So you're absolutely right. We have these rights, and the government, Forest Service, they do. They just say, oh, that's not in our regulations. And the regulations don't agree with, you know, the constitutional rights or the court cases. And that's because they just arbitrarily pick some. And that is called tyranny. You know, when you force your will of opinion on somebody, that's tyranny.
Well, an abuse of power.
Well, obviously an abuse of power.
Well, it since you brought all that up, like you said, it's still coded. We talked about this last week. It was still coded in from the 1890. I don't know what the exact title was, but it was where you got rights to the land by using it with your cattle as long as there was water. And that is still a universal citation.
That's still there. And then in FLIPMA, section 4110.1 of the mandatory qualifications, that goes back to historical use.
And all of this is because conservation use coming up is going to try to just very quietly get rid of us.
You can't tell me that they're not going to put conservation at the top of the uses allowed
on these lands.
And that's exactly what they're trying to do.
And the section 4110.1, okay, so that is in the mandatory qualifications. But it says the applicant must own or control land or water-based property and must be several other things, one of which can be a corporation authorized to conduct business in which grazing use is sought. All of this goes back to grazing use, and all of this goes back to the sort of thing that conservation use, conservationists want to take out, and they are unwilling. And I've talked to a number of them. They are unwilling to even go out to the ranch, and see what conservation practices we're putting in place. And, you know, the washouts that we try to stop up and those kinds of things that we try to do. And, you know, they want to go green. Well, there's nothing greener than a dirt tank. I don't mean that literally, but I mean it is literally taking water from the sky, and wildlife and cattle and whatever drink the water that God gave us out of the dirt that God gave us. Well, you guys know, but I don't have it here, but you know how much ranching contributes to the economy, especially in small towns. It's a lot. And was more, unfortunately, you know, as there's less and less, we contribute less and less. And that's sad because, you know, the days of the quote unquote rich ranchers, they poured a lot of money into a lot of things. We didn't have any, I don't think we had any rich ranchers around here, but, you know, up in another part of the state that has oil leases and stuff, you know, they had Carlsbad and around in there, I think. I mean, they bought lots of stuff. They have good looking schools and scholarships.
I really like what you're saying, but I think there's kids in the background. Are you hearing them?
Hang on, there's kids.
Right,
that's what ranchers do too. We raise kids and we have kids and they run
you
through the house and
really
they make
quiet.
Lots of noise, and that's what we do.
That's what we do.
Yeah.
And not only that, but we take in those town kids that need, especially the boys, that need to have a little sweat equity put into their character.
Right.
You know, we do that. Ranchers have been doing that forever. It's good for them. It's good all the way around.
How many 20 and 30 year olds right now are going out and saying, we're buying a homestead, and they're buying 1 or 2 or 10 acres and trying to do what we're doing? They're doing it in a small size, but there, how many people are wanting to live like we are living?
And people want to be ranchers. We bought our ranch. We didn't inherit it, but I did get a good deal, but we bought it nonetheless. These young couples who want to be ranchers and they want to buy in, they can't because it's millions.
Right.
You know, right. And it's that's a whole nother subject, but it's sad that they can't come in.
Well, and often they don't really want to because they don't want to deal with the regulatory limitations on what they can and can't do.
That's right. And if our grazing leases cannot be mortgaged, if they're not going to be considered real property of a definition that can be on a deed and be mortgaged, they can't get the money to do it unless they, you know, happen to have rich parents, but that doesn't happen often. And, you know, to be a rancher, you don't just, and I told my granddaughter this, not trying to talk her out of being a rancher, but you just can't just walk around behind a cow and know what you need to know now. You've got to be able to read these regulations. You got to be able to stand up at the roundhouse and argue your case. You got to write good protest letters. You've got to learn how to get a mortgage, apparently in the millions. I don't know. I don't know how you get that mortgage. But anyway, the world is getting harder, and we need young people, and we need young people in cattle growers, and we need young people to understand what's going on. And we don't have it. They're more educated than we were, but they don't have it because this education isn't out there and they can't get it. And the only place they can get it is from their parents. And frankly, you know, of all the things that 20-year-olds want to do and stuff, going to a public land council meeting isn't one of them. Can you excuse me for a minute?
Hey, I want to see it. Take the camera with you.
That was that great big noise was a kid with a knife trying to break apart ice in the container in the freezer.
Well, they're hot.
I couldn't figure out what on earth could make that much noise in the kitchen.
Well, you're over there by Carrizozo. It's got to just be hotter than Hades over there.
I'm actually in Carrizozo because I have paid for Wi-Fi here.
Yeah.
And my Wi-Fi at the ranch, I don't know if I could
you
do a podcast.
You need a Starlink. I have a Starlink. I love that thing.
I'll talk to you later and you tell me what a Starlink is.
It's Elon Musk's internet. It's his satellite. It's a satellite that sits out there. I even watch TV on it now. It runs off our solar system. It's really cool. And I can watch TV and use my telephone and use my cell phone and record stuff. I have high-speed internet here at the ranch now.
Wow.
It's outstanding. It's not cheap, but everybody who has it loves it.
Okay, well, I'll look into that.
Okay, I'll send it to you.
All right.
But I would never be able to do anything again with, you know, those old satellites. It just kind of kept us tamped down and unable to do anything anywhere that you didn't have fiber optics. We'll never get that. But this makes it, you know, kind of doable. Tell us the story about the shotguns, meeting people at the door.
Oh, well, that was that Doyle Renfro.
Yeah, you started that.
Yeah.
And you didn't finish.
No, that was all of it. They came to kill his cattle and he met them at the door with a shotgun and said, you're not killing a thing. And they believed him. I don't know what history was behind. They believed him. But anyway, and so they left and they didn't kill any of his cattle. And I guess some of them, you know, drought is nothing new. Kept most of his herd. You know, kept a lot of it.
Okay. Well, I think there's a story over here. And I think, now I could be wrong, but Slaughter Mesa was where they were doing the same thing. They were killing the cows. I don't really know why you said because of drought and whatnot. And I think there was one man who, one rancher who he would somehow sneak out two or three or a dozen cattle of the neighboring ranchers when they would bring their cattle up there to shoot them. He would sneak out two or three cattle and get them back to the ranchers, and it is actually what kept those ranchers going. Yeah, I'm going to tie this into the government. They still get their paycheck whether they're doing the right thing or not, whether they're helping the land or not, whether they're taking just a little bit, one person, putting one person out of business. They still get their paychecks.
They don't improve the land. The employees of the BLM or the Forest Service or the state land or whoever you want to get, they don't improve the land. They have funds, and they give some of those funds sometimes to the rancher, not all of them, or they have rolls of pipe or something that they give to the rancher.
All of that money comes out of our grazing fees anyway.
It does.
That's money that comes from us.
They don't do conservation.
Right.
They don't make improvements. They might.
But they don't give us
anything. I don't think they even bring it out to you. You can go to the BLM office and get a knee tub.
Yeah, you paid for it.
Right.
You paid
yeah.
for that tub with
yeah.
your grazing fees.
Right.
Absolutely.
And then you have to go, can I please have a tub that you bought with my grazing fee?
Exactly. And we get along good with the Socorro office, and I'm very glad about that, because I've dealt with some that I didn't get along with. But, right, and the ones that understand even a modicum of the fact that those are grazing land fees, of which originally, if I remember right, half were supposed to go back into improvements, which is how they talked these ranchers into signing up for that back in the day. Neither the ranchers, in my opinion, or the employees of any of those governmental offices even understand that. And like I said, that's where the term, you know, public land got bandied around. Oh, this is everybody's land, so we need tax money, we need this money, we need that money. And yet, you know, ranchers are being called welfare ranchers because we're using our money.
The grazing fee came from the 25% fund. I mean, we started paying into the grazing fees, and 25% of that goes to schools, 25% of it goes to local roads, and the other 50% of it goes back into administration of these grazing lands. So that welfare rancher moniker is just baloney. Because we pay our own way, and it goes right back into operating of these ranches.
Especially in times of drought, wildlife would have absolutely no way of watering. And,
right.
And our west fence is the White Sands Missile Range, and they do indeed have some dirt tanks left over and some stuff. And when it's a drought, we're overrun with oryx and whatever. They come right through the fence because there's no water. And if you want to look at how range is that isn't maintained, helped by a rancher, just go over there and look.
Isn't that interesting that the oryx during the drought come to where the cattle are?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that something?
Well, pretty mm-hmm. much everything does. Yeah.
Pretty much everything does.
Mm-hmm.
That's
wildlife
right.
follows cattle.
Right.
We know that.
They do. And birds follow cattle because they have to for the droppings. That's where there's a lot of their seeds and stuff are.
And the bears get in the stock tanks and take hot weather baths.
We don't have bears. I'm not saying.
I have all the good stuff.
You do have the good stuff. But we are getting the feral pigs. We're
going to
figure out
good.
How little piggies.
You're going to need some dogs.
I'm going to need some dogs,
mm-hmm,
probably. Because
that's what
yeah.
my friend in Turkey uses them to hunt those big old pigs off of his cattle.
Well, these that I have seen are small pigs, but we know that small pigs can get to be big pigs.
Mm-hmm.
Where are they coming from?
Texas.
Hmm.
Well, all I do now is chase after dogs. I used to do all the riding. I used to work on new legislation and this and that and the other and you know, keep up a website. And all I do now is follow dogs around. That's been the most effective thing that we have done. All of those years expending our our time and our money and our resources. And, you know, and here I am, an old woman with a bunch of big dogs.
And you're getting more done than if you were going to all these meetings.
Right.
That's where I think it's, you have to know your individual rights. You have to do things by yourself, unfortunately.
Yeah, it is unfortunate.
To a great extent, yeah. But not entirely. We still have Howard.
Yeah, we still have Howard. We've got to get Howard.
A lot of
support.
Our warriors, but yeah. We still have Howard.
Well, you were talking about Dick Manning years ago, and Dick Manning, and I'm still friends with his daughter, Kim. In fact, she bought one of my pups last year. But Dick Manning's the one that pulled me into all of this. Back in our early days when we were going to the Federal Lands Council meetings, back when it was Public Lands Council of New Mexico, Dick Manning pulled me in and started helping me get going on, you know, representation of the people in the Gila. So he's one of my favorite old guys. I think we should have a statue like a John Wayne type thing. You know,
I was at one of those meetings with the BLM, one of those protests, I mean, where you're all together, and Dick was running late. And one of the BLM guys, when Dick went by was K. Bob Zinn and Socorro went by the office, the BLM man said, "There's God. We can start the meeting now because God has showed up," or something
awesome.
Like that.
He was such a great guy. Hey, and on that note, this coming Saturday is a Federal Lands Council meeting, and it will happen in Socorro. So anybody listening to this, get your butts to Socorro for the New Mexico Federal Lands Council. First meeting since pre-COVID and first meeting in a real long time. So we all need to get there and start deciding how we want to be led.
And what do you think will happen at that meeting? I'm not familiar.
Well, they talk about everything that affects federal and public, not public, but federal lands ranchers. It's all of the leadership of each organization in New Mexico that represents ranchers that ranch on allotment-based ranches. And all of the presidents or vice presidents or members show up to that meeting. And the board is made up of the leaders of those organizations. So it's similar to cattle growers, but it's specific to federal lands ranching.
Okay.
And they may have people from the agencies there to give an update, and they may not.
Will you have a link, add a link to that on this podcast?
Sure. I'll put the link for the meeting. Hopefully I can get this edited by then, because if this has gotten wild, I'll try and get it edited before then.
Okay. And then also, if you could add, you added on the last week's, the conservation use link.
Yeah. And I need to comments. I do need to still edit and get Howard's comments up there. I should have Lauren Patterson's in my inbox. I have to check my email. But Howard did such an outstanding job last week. I had a lot of comments about that. So not surprised. Not surprised at all.
Not surprised. So,
okay, well, I need to wrap it up. I don't even know if Matt's home yet, and I may have to go and find him.
Yeah, really hard to get along with if they have to walk too far.
Right. He hasn't said anything. Usually he'll sneak up the stairs and wave at me, but he hasn't. So I need to go check.
Well, then we're glad you could come visit with us. Hope to have you back some other time as well.
And if there's anything else you want to put on on our little podcast, just give us a shout.
I've got a state land story. I've got a Forest Service story. Just whenever you get there, let me know.
Okay, see you all next time.